Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Governor Kathleen Blanco and New Orleans Senator Anne de Plessis celebrate a surprising victory in the Senate, a 34-4 vote in favor of their plan to take over failing Orleans Parish Public Schools.
Our goal is to create a new kind of system that receives our children with open arms and gives them the strength of an education that will propel them into a successful future.
The problem with the Orleans Parish School Board before Hurricane Katrina wasn't just that the schools were bad, it's that the school board and the administration was also corrupt.
It was dysfunctional in every single way that you could imagine it being dysfunctional. They hadn't been able to produce an accurate financial statement for more than 5 years. They had FBI agents actually stationed at the school system headquarters, which is quite the rarity. But the superintendent had decided that it was so out of control that he was just going to open the doors and let them have anything they wanted.
Not all school buildings were destroyed during Katrina. As families returned to the city, schools started to reopen. But there were many new faces inside those schools.
After the storm, all employees of the New Orleans school system, about 7,500 teachers and other staff, were fired. That led to an unprecedented diaspora of school teachers. New research suggests only a small fraction of them came back to teach in the city's schools today.
Over the years, white students and teachers fled the public schools, and Walker became a very different place. Public schools became a major employer of the city's growing black middle class. They came to enroll almost entirely black students. But Katrina changed things.
There have been significant unintended negative consequences on black educators, especially veteran teachers.
Basically, it's harder for them to get a job. As for the impact on students, it's difficult to quantify. Students may benefit from the new energy and ideas, but they've lost teachers who look like them and come from a similar background. Many of those who opened new charter schools after Katrina were white and young and not from New Orleans. The percentage of black teachers dropped from about 71% in 2005 to just under 50% last year. That's according to Tulane's new data.
In Louisiana's state-run recovery school district, the last five remaining traditional public schools will stop operating at the end of this year. And when that happens, the district will become the first all-charter system in the country. Policymakers are watching this closely. While charter school supporters point to better test scores and higher graduation rates, others say this move is fraught with the potential to leave the most vulnerable students behind. So we wanted to hear more about what this means for New Orleans and how it might influence debates about education around the country.
But many folks are wondering about the public schools. For the last 10 years, they've been engaged in what some have called the most ambitious experiment ever in public education. And whether or not it's working depends on whom you ask.
I do see improvement in the kids and in the schools.
Is it working?
No.
The charter system has done tremendously well for the local kids here.
It's working for those people who have their money in the hand in the cookie jar.
I think they are better than they were 10 years ago.
context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Tuesday, May 17th, 2016. So I have been told. I think I have said over the years on the program, generally we do not play music or tunes in the background just to be playing stuff. Even the music that plays on the program has some sort of significance for what is being discussed. That certainly would be the case with what you heard in the introduction. A lot of different clips talking about the school situation in New Orleans. The background music, New Orleans native Terrence Blanchard. Apropos for the discussion this evening, that track is called Nazis Pay Too Well. I think here at this program, we have done signature work on what happened in New Orleans, Louisiana, Katrina, to some degree before Katrina, and then afterwards with the levee failure and just disastrous consequences for black people, black citizens in all areas of people activity. If you go back in the archives, you'll hear Gary Rivlin, his visit to the program, as well as our book study session on his book, Katrina After the Flood. June Cross, the documentary that she did with PBS, The Old Man in the Storm, on the Getridge family, which is just phenomenal piece of material I would encourage folks to check out. Black Rage in New Orleans, Dr. Leonard Moore's book, A.C. Thompson, White Vigilante Terrorism in New Orleans, which was grossly underreported, where you had white people, including enforcement officials, who were just killing black people, widely reported, talked about, should have been more discussed, in my opinion, in addition to many other broadcasts that we did, particularly during the 10-year anniversary of Katrina last summer. Lots of great information. Was a privilege to be able to cover and get out more information about what happened. In my opinion, one of the most important things to happen to black people in this part of the world in the last 25, 50 years. With that, and I think, as I've said, you could probably dedicate years of study to just any one area of what happened in New Orleans over the past decade or so, whether it's covering what happened with Charity Hospital. This evening, we're talking about the school situation, black mental health, housing. I mean, there's so many things. Even just Ray Nagin, what's happened with that? Could be years of study. But this evening, we're specifically focused on education. There's been a lot of commentary about what's happened in New Orleans with education. Even Oprah Winfrey's been involved. Spike Lee devoted time to this in some of his documentary films. It just continues to garner a lot of controversy. It was on the front page of the New York Times just last week where they were talking about finally, maybe, returning control of the schools in New Orleans to the Orleans Parish School Board. Finally. But even that kind of had a catch to it. And within the New York Times article, they referenced one of our previous guests on the program who was with us last summer and some of the outstanding journalism that they did covering these different bills around trying to return control of New Orleans schools to the local predominantly black population. The New Orleans Tribune, great illustration of the importance of black journalism. I have it linked in the description for the program. Would definitely encourage folks to check out and read their content. They have a wealth of just phenomenal coverage just about Hurricane Katrina in total and what's happened over the past decade or so, and specifically about this issue. They have pages and pages and pages just covering the evolution of what has happened with the education of black children in New Orleans. We'll be discussing their piece, their views on what's been happening, and hopefully I'll be able to provide some pushback since we don't have folks from the other side. As you heard in the audio clip, sometimes with this, they'll say, well, it depends on who you talk to, because some people think that they have done a great job over the last 10 years. So I'll try to give some pushback so we can get a more even discussion about what's been taking place. But joining us live this evening from New Orleans, managing editor of the New Orleans Tribune, our guest, Miss Anitra Brown. Miss Brown, you with us?
I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for sharing a bit of your evening. Lovely. Grand to have you back on the program. Always great to hear your views on what's taking place down in South Louisiana. Anything that you think would be important for our listeners to know about you and the work that you do before we get started?
I am the editor of the New Orleans Tribune. I've been with the Tribune for now 12 years, and just really committed to sharing information for our readers in a way that they're not going to find anywhere else. That's what we do. That's why we do it. So I'm just happy to share what I know with your listeners as well.
Outstanding. Outstanding. You are a black female for folks who have not seen you. Is that correct?
Last time I checked.
Right on. Right yep. on. So much to cover. I want to try and get as much as we can and encourage. We have any listeners, if you are Louisiana residents, New Orleans residents, definitely chime in, give your views. If you have feedback on this, would be great to hear. Or if you have questions that you would like to ask, feel free to chime in. As I said, I mean, pages, literally, you all have devoted so much content, so much time to discussing specifically what's been happening with the schools in New Orleans over the past decade or so. Do you have children, Ms. Brown?
I do.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I do. I have a daughter.
Is she in? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I have a daughter, and no, she is not in Orleans Parish Schools.
Okay. Okay. Was she ever enrolled in the Orleans Parish school system, or no?
Never.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Was that a deliberate decision to not have her enrolled in that school system, or?
Yes.
Wow. Wow. What was a part of your thought process in that decision?
And I've had options to do otherwise, but first let me go back by saying that we were out of New Orleans for about 6 years post-Katrina. And at the time of Katrina, she was not yet school age. When we returned, so much had changed, and I just was not happy with the way, with the direction of public education in Orleans Parish specifically, that I made the decision that was not what I was going to do with my own child.
Wow. Okay. So you definitely have a personal stake in what has taken place with the school system, because that could have been an option for your daughter in all of this. I know on this program we make an effort to focus on words regularly. And two words that I wanted to get to before I kind of get you to explain just kind of a quick synopsis of how we got to where things are in 2016, where they're finally talking about returning schools in New Orleans to local control, how we kind of got to that point, and then your issues with how that's being done. But two of the words that I've heard a lot, if you kind of listen, if you pay attention to any of the coverage over this issue over the past decades, I think two of the most prominent words that you'll hear are experiment and reform. What are your thoughts just on the use of those words as it relates to educating black children in New Orleans? Experiment, reform.
Right. Let me just step back for 1 second and say this, that we all, whether you have a child in the Orleans Parish public school system or not, let me phrase it like this, whether or not you have a child in public schools in Orleans Parish or not, whether or not you even have school-age children, we all absolutely have a stake in what has happened with public education in New Orleans, particularly post-Katrina. Yes, you absolutely hear those two words used a lot as it relates to what's happened in public education. You're going to hear one side like to call it, these fantastic, wonderful reforms that have worked so well in New Orleans that the rest of the country is now replicating them. And you hear other people say that this has been a horrible, disastrous experiment, one in which children, mostly black, will suffer the consequences of. And, I lean toward that experiment side, that this has been one major experiment. And the reality is, you'll hear early on in this talk and discussion and what was happening especially immediately after Katrina, you know, even those who pushed this, quote, reform, they called it an experiment. You know, this is a great opportunity to do something different. And you know, that's what they thought of it as. And so we were all, the children of this parish, have been, you know, what are you, in experiments, you know, they've been the guinea pigs, the variables, the, you know, they have not been treated in such a way that would suggest that people are actually concerned about their educational well-being. More than an experiment, though, because I think that doesn't quite capture what has actually taken place and why. Because to say that it's just been an experiment would suggest that those who have been involved in it have actually been doing so because they want to see if this works. They want to see if educational outcomes will actually improve. That may or may not be one part of it. The other part, quite frankly, and I think has been just as paramount, if not more so, this has been an absolute wonderful opportunity for privateers and profiteers to come in and get all that they can of money, building facilities, you know, every dollar that follows every child. You have CEOs of these charter operations making six-figure salaries. You know, there are some small school districts, and when I say CEOs of these charter operations, I mean somebody who is technically the principal of a single school, or maybe the CEO of a charter operation where they may run two or three schools. I've seen some small school districts across this country where, you know, you don't have a superintendent making as much as some of these charter school operators are making, and they're running one or two schools, maybe three at the most. So it's been an experiment, and it's been an opportunity for some folk to get rich. And I call it so-called reform. It has not been real reform, and we could talk about that some more.
Wow. Wow. I think it'll come out. It has certainly not been black educators who have been the ones whose bank account has ballooned with all of the quote unquote reform and experimentation that has gone on the last 10 years plus in New Orleans. I guess to start to kind of.
I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. I was struck by something I heard in the clip, I believe, how they refer to these new teachers that have come in. And I think, did they describe them as new teachers or? I think that was something essentially saying new teachers, new young, you know, these young bright teachers from, these are not teachers. This has been this reform has opened the way for probably one of the biggest money makers in all of this. Just contract after contract, TSA, and I call those recruits. Those are not educators. The largely African-American population of veteran educators who were terminated post-Katrina, they certainly have not been benefiting from much of what's happened in reform or this so-called reform since then.
Absolutely. TFA, Teach for America, which certainly an integral part of what has taken place. In New Orleans, not just New Orleans, I think across the country, but certainly they've been a big part of the story about what's been happening with these experiments with black children. And just as you said, I think that's kind of an important part of where this begins. It actually would be a little bit before Katrina, because the Recovery School District, just to kind of explain for listeners who might not be informed about that, that was put in place before Hurricane Katrina. And then once they had this catastrophic levee failure and all this devastation, it was, hey, we can accelerate things with what we had planned for the public school system. Just can you give folks an idea of what happened, what the Republic School District, what that is, the implementation of that, and how that led to the mass firing of thousands of black educators?
Sure, absolutely. So the Recovery School District, as you mentioned, was created by law of the state legislature, created the Recovery School District prior to Katrina. And during the first year, there were It was either 5 or 7. It was a very small number of schools, and I want to say from memory, no more than 5 schools that were based on the criteria that the law set out, school performance scores, based on that criteria. There were only 5 schools in Orleans Parish that were deemed failures and taken over by the Recovery School District. Katrina happened, and you're right, that's exactly what happened. Those who wanted to see this thing happen, this experiment happen in New Orleans, decided this is a great opportunity for us to come in and accelerate this thing. And so what do? They get the Louisiana State Legislature to rewrite the Recovery School District law to lower to change the minimum SPS score. So let's say that it was 80 before Katrina, and you had to have, say, an 80 in order to be considered failing before Katrina. Well, they decided that post-Katrina, the score will now be 100. And I'm just using those as arbitrary numbers. I believe the actual numbers were 67, and then they changed it to 80. But so they raised the SPS score that you need to be considered failing. And so now you have, instead of 5 schools considered failing, you have almost every school in the Orleans Parish public school system now considered failing, not necessarily because they were actually failing, but because the law had been rewritten to facilitate this takeover. So that was the first sign that something isn't right about this. And, you know, one of the things that has bothered me immensely as this whole thing has progressed over the last 10, 11 years is that these same legislators, these same lawmakers who were complicit in this experiment, you know, they continue to act as if they did nothing wrong. When in fact they were responsible for allowing this to ever happen. Because if you have a law, then the law was perfectly fine on August 28th, 2005, but all of a sudden on August 29th or sometime thereafter, you know, you decide, you know what, we want to make the score higher so we can now include more schools in the takeover, you know that something isn't right and that you're doing a disservice to the people that you represent and that you're not serving their needs. You are serving the needs of a select population who is somehow able to give you something that perhaps you don't see your constituency being able to do for you. And that's what happened. And there's so many people, so many individuals and entities that have allowed this to happen on their watch that it's really, it's sickening.
Mm. I suspect one piece of pushback, people who say, hey, Ms. Brown, I disagree. I think, you know, what's happened over the last 10 years has been an improvement. I suspect you would have a sizable chunk of folks who would say, let's be truthful. New Orleans schools were horrendous. Before Hurricane Katrina, nobody would say that they, you know, you all had the best model of educating children prior to Katrina, that the test scores were terrible for many of the schools. There was a lot of corruption reported with the school board, that there needed to be change. What would your response to that be?
My response to that would be, well, it's twofold. First of all, were there problems with the Orleans Parish public school system prior to Katrina? Sure. There are problems with school systems across this country. They had problems in 2005. They have problems today. So do those problems, issues, challenges need to be addressed? Absolutely. What was done in New Orleans was done, it's how they're addressed. And they need to be this in concert with the people of the community that it impacts. You know, last time about this great democracy that we live in was all about, this was not done that way. They used an opportunity poorly, but everybody was gone.
to take over schools. And to be completely factual, there were schools in the parish prior to Katrina that did quite well. They're the same schools that are doing quite well right now. Those are the schools that are now under, that remained, because, of course, not every school was considered safe even after they changed the law. Those are the schools that remained under the control of the Orleans Parish School Board, just a handful. But there were schools that did well. And, you know, when it comes to education, I often say every school system, I don't care how horrible or terrible it is, if you go across this nation, in any public school system, you will find a school or two or three or maybe five, I don't know, some number of schools that are doing great work, educating students from all backgrounds. We know, and when I say we, I mean educators, administrators, we know what works. It's happening in select schools across the country. Why not take what we know that's working and make it happen as best we can in every single school in a system? Of course, you can't have a cookie-cutter approach to it because students have different needs, but there are things that are working. You're using them in this school. It's a school across town you're not doing. And so even in Orleans Parish, prior to Katrina, you had schools that were running fantastically. You had schools that had top scores. You had schools where the students were top performers. And if you went on those campuses, they were the biggest campuses, they had the most resources, they had the best teachers. 15 minutes away on another side of town, a school may have been the least, you know, one of the lowest performing schools. But if you went on campus, it had one of the worst facilities, you know, less resources. If you know, maybe took a survey of the number of veteran educators, highly qualified educators, you know, you would see really huge differences as to compared to what was happening in another school. So, yeah, before Katrina, was Orleans Parish school system, you know, in trouble? Sure, yes. But you don't come in and help a community, or you don't come in and make changes in a community saying that you're addressing a problem without working with the people in that community. So that was the that I was in the food problem. We need to change them. And, you know, because I probably would be very quiet about this whole thing. It's true. But you haven't. I look at the data when it comes out every year, typically in the fall. So, of course, I looked at the data last fall, SPS scores, school performance scores, the same criteria that you use to take schools away. I like to say hijack, steal. I mean, that's what they did. The same criteria that you use to steal these schools away from the students, parents, taxpayers, and voters of Orleans Parish. When you look at these SPS scores that schools under the Recovery School District now have, you will see that those scores are, in many cases, no better than the ones that schools had before Katrina. In fact, because the state legislature has allowed the Board of Education to play with numbers and decide this year this is going to be a failing score, but maybe 2 years from now we're going to lower the SPS again, so now this isn't a failing score. You have situations where schools that are now considered B schools, meaning, you know, high-performing schools, have SPS scores. Taken over. So I'm not a statistician, but I do know some basic math. And if you took over a school 10, 11 years ago because it had an 79 SPS score, but now in 2016, you're telling me a 79 SPS score is actually a B. I'm saying you're trying to pull one over on me. I'm not buying it. So the ones who want to talk about, oh, they were horrible and now it's so much better, no, they can miss me with that.
Wow. One of the important points I would make sure I get in, I want to read one of the a paragraph from one of the articles that you all have at the New Orleans Tribune. But one of the important pieces, I think, also is that these changes in November 2005 with the firing of the teachers and then the changing of the school performance scores and saying, hey, we're going to shift things around with this school recovery school district. A lot of this stuff was done when the city of New Orleans was almost emptied in terms of the actual population. People remember when we talked about all that, a lot of people had a long time before they could return to New Orleans. You had a lot of military personnel where you are not allowed to come back into the city for a long time. We talked about the implications of this with regards to voting and a lot of other really important things where a lot of these changes are happening when people are struggling. They're even struggling to find their children, to find other family members, their property. Is my house still intact? You've got all these things that you're worried about. And they're totally changing how Black children are going to be educated in this city. And even just keeping in mind what Jimmy Reese said way back when in the Wall Street Journal, that it seemed like some people already had this in mind, that they were making major changes, that we are not really too concerned with Black people coming back, period. So whatever, for public housing, public education, that's not really a concern of ours anyway, because we don't intend for you to be here. But...
We poor Black people to come back anyway, so absolutely.
You all have a piece just in terms of the history, because a lot of people do bring that up to just, you know, really emphasize like, hey, the schools were terrible, so you shouldn't be complaining. We tried to make things better, and they were horrible what you had at first, so, you know, you should be happy with what you've got. You all have a piece at the Tribune, New Orleans Education Reform, A Guide for Cities or a Warning for Communities. And this is written Kristen Burris. And she writes, first and foremost, charter school advocates ignore the history of white supremacy. The public schools in New Orleans had challenges before the storm because of racialized state neglect. How do charter schools remediate this history of racism? They don't. Second, the city's veteran teachers, most of them Black, were fired after the storm. The state said then that there was a teacher shortage and signed a contract with Teach for America, whose recruits are generally transient, inexperienced, and white. This move disenfranchised Black teachers and also harmed Black students by denying them qualified teachers who have taught and lived for years in the community. Third, charter schools are being operated and governed without the input of the Black community. Local folks often can't get charter school applications approved. They don't sit on charter school boards, and the locally elected school board no longer controls the majority of schools in New Orleans. The Board of Elementary and Secondary Education, BESE, rules from Baton Rouge. Fourth, master planners placed monies for rebuilding schools in a general fund and did not allocate them in ways that are racially and geographically equitable. Many Black working-class neighborhoods downtown do not have public schools now. Most have been rebuilt uptown. There appears to be a concerted effort to destroy Black neighborhoods by depriving them of the resources needed to rebuild and thrive. Excellent paragraph at the New Orleans Tribune. You can read the whole piece. With the recovery school district specifically, who's on this board? What kind of controls do they have? And is it true that this was only supposed to be in place for 5 years and they were supposed to return control to the local Orleans Parish School Board?
So any school that's, well, let me start from the beginning. There is no recovery school district board. The recovery school district is essentially a local education agency, even though it's a state agency. It operates like a district and have a superintendent. So technically, the board that controls the recovery school district for all intents and purposes is the State Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. We call that the BESE board. these were statewide elected positions with a few appointments made by the governor. So you have a mix on the Bessie board of people who are elected statewide and some appointments made by the governor. Here's the thing. Arlene Parish has essentially one, depending on how you look at it, there's two seats on the Bessie board where the representative of the board on that particular seat is presenting interest in Arlene Parish. One of those seats covers a small portion of Arlene Parish and then into some other neighboring river parishes. So this is a very small portion of Arlene Parish and not really the portion of Arlene Parish where a lot of African-American residents live. And then you have one other seat that covers much of Arlene Parish and, again, some neighboring portions of neighboring parishes. But this particular seat does include the vast majority of the parish's African-American residents. So when you think about the Bessie makeup, you have this state board that is essentially the board that regulates the school district with one person sitting on it that actually represents the interest, meaning or the people of Arlene Parish, but this board pretty much rules the vast majority of schools in Arlene Parish because the vast majority of schools in Arlene Parish are being operated under the umbrella, let's put it like that, of the Recovery School District. Now, in reality, every last one of these charter operations have their own unelected boards. And this can be a mix of people from the, you know, the community where the school exists. Some of these boards now, in recent years, some of these boards have started to, you know, maybe put a parent representative on them, but that's not necessarily a criteria for these boards. And a lot of these boards, you know, you'll have a board for a school where the, you know, the student population, as is the case with most of the schools, is largely African American, and you'll have, you know, people on these boards, these rich white uptown business types, whose kids have never attended a public school, you know, don't know what the inside of a public school looks like. And they're the people who are serving on these boards. And so any way you look at it, particularly as it relates to the RSD and the charter schools that operate under it, voters have been disenfranchised, taxpayers have been disenfranchised because they have no elected representation, even though these are public schools. This is public funding. So that's, you know, the short answer to what this makeup looks like. And I also want to clarify, just in case people aren't aware or unclear. So the Arlene Parish School Board, the duly elected body that governs public education in New Orleans, still exists. It operates a handful of schools, about 16, I believe, compared to the 60, nearly 60, that the RSD operates. So essentially right now you have two local education agencies operating in Arlene Parish, the RSD, which was the takeover agency, and the Arlene Parish School Board. And yes, at the end of the day, what should happen, what was supposed to happen, what was in the law, the original intent of the law that created the Recovery School District, that a school would get taken over if it's considered failed, at which time the Recovery School District would have 5 years to improve that school. That school improved, it goes back to its school board. So school go back to the Parish School Board, and school did not improve, you know, the state could not do better in 5 years, then the school would not go back. It would, in fact, be closed with those students who attended that school then being redistricted to better performing schools in Orleans Parish. This is not what has happened. I mean, from the beginning to the end of this thing, the people of New Orleans have been lied to, misled, and duped. And so when it was time, you know, let's say around 2010, when it was time for schools to start going back, you had a state superintendent then by the name of Paul Pastorek, who was with the Bessie board to rewrite the policy to say that these charter boards, these unelected charter boards, get to vote on whether or not the school that they, on whose board they serve, goes back to the Orleans Parish School Board. You know, I've always just thought to myself, on what planet, if I'm an unelected board member of a school that now has a multi-million dollar budget, I'm getting to determine, you know, contracts for this thing or that thing, you know, I'm getting to hire some CEO for $250,000, and so now maybe, you know, they're really beholden to me. Whatever the case is, I have some clout with this position, and I wasn't even elected to it, and now you want me to vote to give it back to the people? Watch me. Not going to happen. And that's what you've had over the last 5 or 6 years. You've had dozens of schools that have been eligible based on, you know, the performance criteria. You've had dozens of schools that have been eligible to return with only two electing to do so, and technically one actually electing to return because it was eligible to return. You had another that returned because the charter operation changed hands from one charter operator who was operating under the RSD to another that operated under the Orleans Parish School Board, which since everything has happened in terms of this reform, the Orleans Parish School Board now operates several charter schools as well. With some direct run schools also. And so that was really kind of a return by default. It wasn't necessarily that it was a great performing school whose board decided to return. That particular board actually had some issues with the RSD and things that were happening there. And so they decided, oh, well, let's go with another charter operator who operates under the Orleans Parish School Board. So, yeah, and it's been a bunch of lies from beginning to end, because in 5 years, schools that perform well were supposed to go back, and that hasn't happened. But they say it's going to happen now because we have this new, great, fantastic law that the governor just signed to return the schools. Can I tell you about that?
I want to hear you explain the difference between HB 466 and HB 432. But just before we get to that, I wanted to ask, as you said that, I thought that was important, that there, number one, this was only supposed to be a 5-year temporary thing, and it has not played out that way at all, that they have just continued to change the rules where it's consistently to the disadvantage of local Black parents, Black students, Black educators. You have a piece specifically, and I'm probably going to mispronounce the name of the school, where you're talking about one of the schools that was about to return to the Orleans Parish School Board, but some curious things happened along the way. This is it Langniape Academy? The piece that you have, Langniape Academy's and Ira Thomas case get the side eye glance, where you talk about this is one case that kind of shows that things are not on the up and up, that things look especially suspicious about what happened with this particular school and why this one was allowed to return to the Orleans Parish School Board. Can you explain?
Yeah, well, the thing with Langniape Academy, and this was one of the schools, it never returned to the Orleans Parish School Board, even though it's SPA. High enough for the book to elect to return, and the board did in fact elect to return. They wanted to return to the Orleans Parish School Board. Before they could do that, the RSD says, hey, wait a minute, you know, these guys have been doing some funny things as it relates to, if I'm not mistaken, it had to do with special needs students and and the services they were providing for them, which all along, you know, the services that many of these recovery, these charter schools in the recovery school district had been providing, and their ability or their willingness to properly serve special needs students on their campuses has been a major issue since this thing began. It's been a major issue that, you know, for all intents and purposes, for many years, was pretty much ignored by the RSD, who, you know, we're going to work on it, but never really did anything. Well, all of a sudden, now, the issues at Lanyap Academy, whose SPS score was high enough to return, for the board to elect a return, all of a sudden, the issues that they had were so flagrant and so horrible that the recovery school district yanks their charter, basically closes them down. They would rather, and this was about maybe 2 years ago, the short answer to that is they would rather shut a school down at that time than see it return to true local control. That got the side-eye glance. I mean, that was basically, you know, and I'm a lady, but that was some BS. That was some BS. Then you had the situation... with former school board member Ira Thomas, and I talk about this when I hear people talk about the corruption, oh, it was so corrupt, and, you know, people were still learning, and the ethical cap out there. There has been so much corruption and theft of money in this post-Katrina education reform. You have had numerous instances of trust school officials dipping their hands in the kitty, stealing $10,000, in some cases $70,000, $50,000 here, $70,000 there, tens of thousands of dollars over and over again, unchecked, because there really is no accountability. There has been no accountability. So, you know, it comes out maybe a year, 2 years later with an audit that, wait a minute, there's $74,000 missing. You've had legislative audits over and over again that have shown that property and money and equipment under the recovery school district in the millions of dollars is unaccounted for. So again, when they start talking about the corruption, the theft, the da 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 that existed under the Orleans Parish school system, but they don't want to talk about what has happened under the recovery school district under this reform, you know, that strikes me as disingenuous. And just, just not being transparent. And you have this situation where, quite frankly, I believe, you know, this particular, and let me preface this by saying, you know, I'm not giving any elected official a pass to do anything that's not on the up and up, that's not legal. It was a poor decision and a bad move. But there's a part of me, maybe it's the conspiracy theorist in me, that really feels like as you had one or two schools, you know, kind of looking and saying, hey, time for us to go back to the Orleans Parish school system. We want local control. We want to be under the duly elected governing body for public education in Orleans Parish. Then all of a sudden you get some guy going into a school board member's office offering a little petty $5,000 bribe. It was just, to me, an opportunity to have an excuse to say, hey, they're not ready. They're not ready to take schools back because of this little $5,000 bribe that this one guy took, when you had all along these charter operators and their employees doing 10 times, 15 times, 20 times, I promise, it's taking in a vibe. So, yeah, that got the side-eye glance. I've been given a lot of side-eye glances over the last decade. Somebody used to look at my eyes shut. They stayed looking to the side.
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest managing editor, the New Orleans Tribune, Miss Anitra Brown. Specifically, the thing that stood out to me a lot when I read that piece about Mr. Ira Thomas and Langyap Academy, is that you emphasize that, and again, not giving a pass to anyone, any elected official. Mr. Ira Thomas is a black male, unless I'm misinformed. I'm not saying that it's acceptable for him to take a bribe or do anything corrupt while he's in office. We should all be doing the correct thing. But it seemed like that they waited, that they had information that he had taken this little $5,000 bribe a long time ago, like a year ago. And they waited.
They waited to
release this when it was more convenient to say, hey, wait a minute. It looks like we have schools that are looking at going back to the Orleans Parish School Board, local black people being in control of schools in their area, to say, oh, wait a minute, we'll sit on this for a year and wait until, in terms of timing, and these schools looking to go back to say, oh, no, you can't go back. Look at this. You got these corrupt officials. He's taking this money. It's the same old thing. We can't go back to what we had before the storm. No. And it's been my experience. I have seen that within the system of racism where, again, not excusing incorrect behavior, but if somebody did something wrong, let's go ahead and address this now. Why wait, a year for this person where they can continue to do more corrupt things over the next year while you're waiting on this? Go ahead and do it immediately where they will sit so that they can get the biggest bang for their buck to say, hey, this will further. If you remember what the book that we read, Leonita McLean, also a black journalist, where she was talking about, this tends to be a trend within the system of racism where they can set things up to make it look like black people are just totally inept, that you cannot trust black people to do anything. You got Ray Nagin and you got Kwame Kilpatrick and you got Ira Thomas and you got Jesse Jackson Jr. And oh my God, it's just horrible. They cannot be in charge of anything. All you can expect is corruption and malfeasance and thieving, and it'll just be terrible, and it'll be our children that are paying the price for all of this. So let's just keep them in the recovery school district for, another 5-10 years or however long it needs to be until black people here shown that they have their act together. I've seen this pattern consistently. I really thought that was extremely important in that piece. Did you want to explain now the new bills that have just come out? There were at least two separate ones. So we had House Bill 466 by State Representative Joe Bowie, and then we had House Bill 432 by Karen Carter Peterson, who's a black female as well. The difference between... Go ahead.
Right. So it was there was a House bill that has essentially, at this point it's moved, it's stalled in committee. This House bill, or a similar version of it, was offered last legislative session by State Rep Joe Bowie. And it was real straightforward and simple. You know what? Y'all set a criteria. If schools have made the necessary academic improvement, they go back to the Orleans Parish School Board. That's what you said you were going to do. That's what we're going to do. That's what his bill said. Legislative session, this bill was approved by the House of Representatives, and it ended up... This bill was approved by the House Education Senate Committee. It made it out of the Senate Committee, but failed on the House floor. And failed on the House floor, but not by a ridiculously astronomical number. I mean, I talked to Representative Bowie shortly after that, and he still was feeling really good about the bill. Of course, his failing was a disappointment, but he had talked to some of his colleagues, he said, looking at, what needs to happen in order to bring this bill back this session and have it go through. Real simple, straightforward bill. You took our schools because you said they were failing. The ones that are failing, give them back to us. Sounds good to me. And what's really been happening over the course of the last, really strongly over the course of the last 2 or 3 years, I think you've seen a groundswell of people, parents, taxpayers, voters in New Orleans saying, yeah, we were pretty much tired of this stuff. Give us our schools back. And so, and then with the very, even though it fell, with the very close margin that bill could have, is gotten through, there was another element. These pro-reformers, these experimenters, I can't think of the other words I want to call them, I can't say on air. But so you have another element, this reform movement who absolutely sees that they cannot continue to keep public education away from the public, that the people of New Orleans want their school back. And so this legislative session, you had a Senate Bill 432, offered by State Senator Karen Carter Peterson, who was there. And, of course, she was there when the original bill to take over schools passed. She was there before then. She actually, I mean, we can go pre-Katrina to about a year before Katrina. There was a bill that passed that weakened the powers of the Orleans Parish School Board, moved some of the financial oversight to a to another organization, basically outside one of these groups that, you know, supposedly comes in and handles your financial matters when you're in disarray. Or allegedly disarray. Anyway, you know, she pushed for that bill. So she's been at the forefront of doing some things long before Hurricane Katrina. This was her bill to return schools. 11 pages, and just a very, in my opinion, and the opinion of the New Orleans Tribune, you know, it gets a D or maybe an F for effort. If this is a return about school in Orleans Parish to the voters, the people, the parents, the students of Orleans Parish, it gets an F for effort because it does not do that in any meaningful way. There are so many sanctions or this bill, this SB 432, which passed the Senate, passed the House, and as of last Thursday was signed by our governor. This bill has so many criteria, so many things that the Orleans Parish School Board cannot do in terms of management or oversight of these charter operations, that they might as well stay where they're at. So you basically have a bill that returns the schools without returning the schools. It keeps everything practically status quo. In fact, in that New York Times article that you referenced, that referenced us, the current state superintendent of schools, you know, actually agrees. Oh, yeah, it's pretty much status quo. And so what I see happening here is you get a group of people, you know, getting an opportunity to get some political capital by saying that, well, we pushed through this bill to return schools, when they actually didn't, the bill that they pushed through didn't really return schools. And there's a very problematic portion of this bill that I keep trying to, even though it's passed, I keep talking about. There's a portion of this bill that allows, once they've returned, that allows, quote, return, allows any of these charter operators to petition to become their own local education agency. A local education agency is basically the federal terminology for a school district, meaning a governing body to have control and oversight over local public education. How are you going to have a city? And what I foresee happening, what I absolutely foresee happening, is many of these charter operations petitioning to do just that. I fear that in, 5 to 7 years, we're going to see, instead of a New Orleans with the RSD and the Orleans Parish School Board operating, we're going to see a New Orleans with 15 different school districts, and it's just going, each one of these school districts will actually have these operations. I don't even want to call them school districts. Each one of these school operations will have complete governing control over their school or the schools that they operate. They will have complete control over the money that follows the students, that follows the facilities. It's going to be, in my opinion, worse than what we have now. And it is absolutely, it has to be a civil rights violation. And there's a company that, like, please let one of these charter schools petition to be an LEA, granted LEA status, so that lawsuit can be filed, because then maybe finally then we can shut this thing down.
context of white supremacy. That's this, in my view, would be another case. I think I wrote it in the description. Frequently, racists can do a very good job of making it seem that black people are in charge, whether they put a black person in an elected office, or they'll say, hey, Ray Nagin is in charge of New Orleans, or whatever the case may be, when that is not the case at all. It may look like we're giving control back to local black people of their schools, but when you actually dig into the details, that is not the case at all. There was... Go ahead.
No, I think one of the most disheartening things about everything that's taken place, and, you know, what I've done over the last several years is kind of read and research literally, you know, the playbook, the manuals that some of these reformers have out there about pushing the reform effort across the country. And I was particularly struck, that is, by one section, you know, where they say that, you know, a part of their plan, a part of their program is, in order to get community support for reform effort, is to gain the support of trusted individuals within the community and then use them to then continue to prepare the reform. I'm always particularly disheartened by, unfortunately, the number of African-American leaders, elected and otherwise, who have allowed themselves, and some of them get their little feelings hurt when we use this word, but there's no other word to describe it, who have allowed themselves to be co-opted, and I'm going to add some and who is co-opted for crumbs. You know, they may be getting, I don't know, a little, you know, a job here or there, or a position for this person, or, you know, maybe a nice little donation or a grant here and there. You know, but at the end of the day, they've allowed themselves to be co-opted for crumbs and have sold their community out in the process. Those two bills were night and day. One was 11 pages, one was two. You know, you didn't need 11 pages to return the schools. You did not need, if you were really trying to return schools to the control of a local governing agency, you were really trying to control, return schools to the people of Wallace, you did not need 11 pages to do it. You need 11 pages to pull a fast one, though, and that's done.
Wow. Ray Nagin's name has been mentioned a few times. Might be another great example of getting a few crumbs where ultimately what you're doing is not going to help black people. And great illustration, after you get those few crumbs, that does not necessarily mean that things will go well for you. That once you have served your purpose, you can conveniently be dumped when you are no longer needed. But there was a piece in that New York Times article where they referenced you all, and they, in essence, said they're absolutely right at the New Orleans Tribune that this is not going to change who's in control of these schools. It's going to preserve things exactly as they are right now. But within that piece.
I read the New York Times piece where they called us blah, 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 and the very sentence was, and I'm not putting it verbatim, but it's basically a state superintendent, non-white, who has been, you know, came from the form, big part of this, big part of moving this thing forward to the detriment of our community. State Superintendent John White admits that, yes, this bill preserves status quo. I stopped reading. Well, that's when you drop the mic. I mean, what else do you say? What else?
Yeah, they, after the exact sentence, and that's pretty much what he said, preserves the status quo. The paragraph after that, it says, in detailed language, it forbids the local board to interfere with charter schools' autonomy on decisions like whom to hire, what to teach, how to spend their money, and how long to make the school day. Pre-Katrina, those decisions rested, as they do in most school districts, with the elected board, which hires the superintendents who hire the principal. So just giving you an idea of what you will not be able to do. But within that article,
right, you don't know how to spend their money, because then they can't pay CEOs. And then it's crazy, because we're not even calling principals anymore at these charter schools. They're not CEOs. And CEOs can make $250,000 a year. But principals aren't going to make CEOs can make $250,000 a year. So no, we're not going to tell them how to spend their money. We can't tell them how to spend their money, because then we won't have six-figure principals.
Mm. not black principals or black CEOs.
I'm not sitting here represent, as I just kind of said, which I had, and it's always, you know, the only thing that's happened from this as most disheartening is that the children are one building. In the end of the day, we're going to have a whole generation of children who are not in this form. That's the most thing is the number of so-called African-American leaders who allow themselves to be called for a family or for a lot here or there, or, you know, the organization a grant from the Walter Foundation. That's probably the second most disheartening thing. You know, and I'm not begrudging anybody for having a job and in a salary. But I don't, you know, if you have to sell out your community and do it, and when you called on it, then we have a big problem, because that's what we do up in New Orleans. We, you know, for 30 years, we have told the truth. We've been an unfettered part of the community, and we're not going to stop now.
The Times piece, they continued after that. They said that some worry that with the return to local control and without the state's prodding, the schools will lose momentum and urgency. They hear return and recall a school board that was notoriously corrupt and dysfunctional before the storm. Its televised meetings were bring your popcorn events, like watching Jerry Springer, said Joey LaRouche, the principal of the Kipp Charter High School here, who graduated from the city's school before Katrina. And then someone commented to what Mr. LaRouche said. He said, to compare the pre-Katrina Orleans Parish School Board to the Jerry Springer show is actually an insult to Mr. Springer. As someone who has lived here and been involved in this community for most of my life, I cannot overstate how dysfunctional the public school system in New Orleans was before the state took it over. I do not claim to be an expert on public education, but I do know with certainty that what we have now is far superior to what we had then. So there is a great deal of trepidation about restoring control to a local elected school board, and a fear that this is the first step in dismantling the charter school system. I, for one, hope that this is not the case. And I've seen quite a bit of feedback that kind of has that same kind of, oh no, they're going to have, you know, control back in the hands of these black people and it'll be terrible again. Your response to that would be?
My response to that, well, I have many responses to that. One is first of all, the current incarnation of the Orleans Parish School Board, while there are, or I have some concerns about this being more than I care to see, a full-form board who has gotten a considerable assistance in, as it relates to one or more members than I think should be there, considerable assistance from some of these major entities in this reform movement in their campaign. So we have a reform-leaning school board that I'm not particularly happy with in terms of some of the membership, but, I mean, elected school board, which is what I can say about the, and it's not the same school board that existed pre-Katrina. So, you know, for people continue to talk about the school board from 10 or 15 years ago, like these are the same individuals, I think are being unfair and disingenuous. This is an, and it's not the same incarnation, and it is an elected school board, meaning at the end of the day, these are the only people that speak to and for and answer to the voters of Orleans Parish. Every last one of these charter operators, particularly the ones who operate under the RSD, have appointed boards that don't have to answer to a soul. Public money to run these schools. That is called taxation, without representation. I'm pretty sure the whole war was fought over that in the country. You can't tell me, so they can call it Jerry Springer or not, I will take an elected board of misfits over a board whose meetings, you know, when and the thing is, this board is not a board of unruly people who are, you know, acting crazy and throwing chairs on a stage. This is not the same inclination. In fact, the board had white, you know, white before Katrina was not the same board that many of the people who talk about how hard before Katrina, they're still not talking about the same board. There was an election. If you have a reach at 10, 15, 20 years, and okay, yeah, when they talk about things that were wrong with the governing body of Christina Parish, in some cases, they back 20 years to come up with, the overreach, and then the other response I have to say that, and I've kind of already touched on it. The one is that we're not talking about the same board. We're not talking about the same people. We're talking about different board. The thing is, I'd rather have an unelected board. I mean, I'd rather have an elected board than an unelected board. And right now, we have 40-something unelected boards deciding how taxpayers are used, making for how your child matriculates through school. It's not for parents who have no clue, no where to go, because, okay, well, it's my call. What school member do I call when my child has an issue? My child is at this school, you know, I'm explaining, even which has this unelected board, you're still a voter. You have some ability to talk to the school board member that you elected, but in reality, if that charter operation is running the offices of the RSD, then, you know, in reality, your elected school board member really can be replaced. That's anti-democracy. I mean, if that's not anti-democracy, I don't know what is. You know, we need to return to democracy. We need to return to the people of this city having a voice in the public education landscape, in Orleans Parish. Anyone who does not appreciate the value of that is, quite frankly, un-American.
Context of white supremacy. I was going to see if we had time to snag a few callers. If you, if I don't want to take up your whole evening, if you have commitments or what have you, if you need to go, that's we can move expeditiously to make sure we're not taking up your whole evening. I know you have other things to do as well. If folks have questions, I'm getting us back on the, for people that are listening online, I'm adding us back in there as well. If people have questions you would like to ask Ms. Brown, feel free to dial in. The number is 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have questions you would like to ask. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you have questions. Even though this, you know, deal, this very much is a New Orleans story, what we've been focused on with schools in New Orleans, I think this is extremely important. Just number one, I think, and I was saying this the whole time last year when we were focused on the 10-year anniversary of Katrina, I think this is such an important event, not just with the levee failure and the storm and what have you, but everything that's happened in the city over the past 10-plus years. I think black people should be extremely knowledgeable about what happened to this, because I think it reveals so much about how racism works. But specifically with this school piece, I think this is extremely important, because this is something that I suspect people will be seeing in their area. If you're in Chicago or really anywhere where they have a significant population of black people, this very same thing could be, and in some cases already is, beginning to take place. I think a lot of people were...
You don't have to suspect... Last year, some true education advocates hosted were invited educators and policymakers from across the nation, but particularly some of these where this same kind of social reform effort, it just was beginning. Stages of a warning of, you know, this is what we've experienced. This is what happened. You know, you guys have the advantage because it happened to us. We weren't here for the most part. This gone about why our city was deep, and we were, you know, trying to piece our lives back together. We have an advantage because that hasn't happened, that kind of disaster that we experienced hasn't happened where you're at, so keep fighting. It's happened already in place. And it's happened, actually hold up New Orleans as a mob. And so this was an opportunity for a lot of the true education advocates and people who have done the research and know, you know, so what really happened in terms of and in terms of performance, to say, hey, you know, everything that you've heard is not true. And let me say this. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that even right now in Orleans Parish, either the Orleans Parish School Board or the Recovery School District, that there aren't some that are doing well. Particularly in Orleans Parish Board, where the high-performing schools, the schools is already on the way, the name of me, I'm not going to and getting schools were already doing great. Still doing great. You know, and that's been one of the kind of the fallacies of this reform, because when they look at the numbers, when the so-called reformers talk about the numbers, they put all of these schools together. Well, you came and you took all of my apples to turn them to oranges, you know, and then you must put all of these, you know, now look at some oranges. That's what happened. You let me move. Some kind of still happens. You haven't turned these poor farming schools into better performing schools. Are there schools in RSD that are doing okay? Sure. They could be doing okay on the parish school board. They could be doing okay under the Orleans Parish School Board and the people who decide. They could be doing okay under the Orleans Parish School Board and parents would have an elected official that connect to and understood that this is what was my interest, instead of saying, I'm a school to call when they suspended my first grader.
Context of white supremacy, extremely important, and again, that's just my opinion, I think that will probably play out as this moves to other places, as this is touted as, you know, this is going to correct the problems with public education, just more laws, strategies, what have you, that disenfranchise black parents, black educators, so that they don't have a say-so about how things are going to be run. The budget, I think you all have a lot of great articles at the New Orleans Tribune where you don't have any oversight. You don't have anyone who's elected who's responsible to the local citizens where they can just do whatever they want with the budget. They can do whatever they want in terms of suspension policies, expulsion policies, who's going to be hired, what the curriculum is, just on and on and on and on and on. Where you have no say-so at all. And I think you all had articles that were pretty brazen in terms of them just saying, hey, if you don't like the way that we're doing it, take your child out of school. No problem. You don't have to be here. You can, you know, go pick a different school if you don't like the way that we're doing it. And knowing that, you know, for a lot of parents, it's going to be different, particularly if you're talking about black people who don't have a lot of money, they don't have the resources to just pick any type of school that they want for their child, or a private school or that sort of thing, that it could be a real challenge for parents, black parents, to be able to get quality education for their children in this sort of environment. Not, in my view, not just going to be something that's happening in New Orleans, going to be widespread.
It's going to be happening everywhere. And you're right, it is a challenge for parents who are, I mean, there are so many different things that you have to understand when you look at this thing in its full context. So New Orleans, you know, African-Americans, you know, disproportionately experience poverty, low wages. I'm making $7.25 an hour cleaning hotel rooms downtown. I have to work two jobs to, you know, keep our heads and some of these schools. You know, want you to come to school, and I'm not. I in a situation of a typical parent. You know, if I don't come and volunteer 10 hours a semester at school, then you have a problem with me. I can't afford to volunteer and just 10 hours a semester, or you know, 15 hours a semester at your school, at the school, because I have to eat. I have her at her wit's end because they literally kept suspending her first grader. But they kept suspending the child. Then, last suspended them, she was told the day after that. Yesterday. Then so but yes tomorrow, you know, because we have a we can have a chaperone on the field trip. He can't field trip. The charter would tell us. So I fight from the North Tribune. I'm concerned call from who was suspended, to watch, and you wait all the time he was in to come back to school, because of field trip, and I'm saying, school field trip, so why the child cannot come to school tomorrow, I promise you. The school leader that I spoke with on the phone for within 15 minutes, the parent was calling me back. Miss Leacher, I don't know what you hate, but now all of a sudden everything, and my child can go to school. So many cases, you know, I just don't know. They have with some information that they have the right to push back against this. They don't know. They don't have the time. You know, they're so busy trying to keep their heads above water that they just don't know. And they can't. And they're stuck. They're stuck in this system.
Wow. I have heard that repeatedly, not just in the realm of education, but taking advantage of black people, particularly black people, if they don't have a lot of money or if they're not well educated or what have you, where they can get them where they're just not totally informed about all of their rights or all of the options that they have about how they're dealing with a particular situation, and even making sure that that's the case, where they're not properly informed about how things are going to play out or what options they have or what rights they have for themselves as a parent or for their children. I have heard that play out, not just in New Orleans, but really on a global scale, where that seems to be standard operating procedure.
It's why it's illegal for states to learn rights. You give them information and you got a problem.
Absolutely. I think that's one of the primary goals of the New Orleans Tribune, to make sure that people are more informed about things that are happening and can make better decisions about how to deal with these situations.
That's why we need to vote.
For sure. I'm going to check in and see if folks have any questions they want to make sure that they get in. Thomas in New York, and for folks, if it was if you had any problems, I guess, hearing, hopefully the archive will be able to have it so that it's pristine so that people can hear the archive content. Thomas in New York, did you have a question you wanted to ask Ms. Brown?
Good evening, guys. Good evening, Ms. Brown.
Greetings.
Evening.
How are you guys? I had a quick I had a couple of questions, but first I just wanted to say I'm in New York City. It's bored. It has to do with unions as far as the Board of Education goes. But my question for you is, I had a couple. Where do since Katrina, there's been a much more higher population of white people in New Orleans. What schools are they going to, white kids?
Yeah. I said earlier about those, you know, these schools that were not sure. And there are some other schools, Raj at the elementary level, that's a really tough school. When you have attending school in Orleans Parish, I can assure you that, you know, none of the time they're going to be at one of those schools. Those are the schools they were at before Katrina. We're at the main school. Schools like Lusher and Ben Franklin. Those names mean nothing to you, but those were bad schools prior to the storm, meaning these were schools that have to live in a certain neighborhood to go to this school. If you performed at a certain level on a test, you could be anywhere and go to a McMahon, you know, go to a Lusher. So you see sometimes a lot of any of white man, public school, American school, you're going to see them for the most part, one of these ripples. And then there's our charter. There's so many new charters that have opened up that are some of the, I say so many new, there's a couple, handful, here, that are some of the high ones. They've finagled their admissions requirements. Your professor, you're a seat, a very high school that was a high-performing school before storm, will now have seats at Lusher are reserved. So, you know, they're working out. The ones who are in who are in the couple system, they're making sure. They're the ones who have a resource to matriculate. The French immersion school.
Roz, did you have a quick question you wanted to get in to Ms. Brown again? I know some of the folks are saying they still were having some tech issues with the line being clear. Roz, did you have a question you wanted to get in?
Yeah. The situation is, do they allow black people to homeschool?
Yeah, you can homeschool. I know a couple of parents who have done it and are doing it. You know, there are definitely opportunities for that.
Is the number? Oh, sorry.
I don't have any numbers in terms of how many black parents are doing.
Okay, that was actually my next question. Would you say that the number of black parents that are choosing to homeschool, would you say that it's growing just from what you're seeing yourself?
I think anecdotally I can certainly say that it's growing as an option among black parents, absolutely. And they're doing it, you know, what I'm seeing, just anecdotally what I'm seeing, you know, you may not have a parent that's staying at home teaching their child at home per se, but you have sort of these homeschooling, you know, for the lack of a better phrase, cooperatives, where, you know, there may be a parent who's homeschooling and she may be homeschooling her child, but then, you know, has three or four, you know, maybe five other kids who whose parents are also sending their children to that environment for that homeschooling opportunity. That's what I'm seeing in terms of what's happening. And again, it's anecdotally, you know, I can't give you a number. I can certainly say that, yeah, from what I've seen over the years, have I seen this as a growing option and something that more black parents that I come in contact with are either doing or considering? Absolutely.
All right, thank you.
And it should be an option.
But
it can't be in lieu of a true quality, truly public education system.
Absolutely, I understand that completely. And my other question was, are there any African center schools left in New Orleans, and were there any prior to Katrina, and are there any now?
Any, I'm sorry, what was the attributes?
African-centered schools?
Okay.
I'm sorry if you didn't hear me.
Yeah. No, I can certainly tell you that right now in this post-Katrina environment, there are no truly what I would consider an Afro-centric school or African-centered school. Of course, it's so much has changed in terms of personnel. I would say that before Katrina, because 71% of your educators were African Americans, just, you know, that environment in and of itself was one in which, your culture, your experience was understood, celebrated, appreciated, even if the school itself was not considered Afrocentric. You had teachers and other administrators who that you saw that looked like you and, grew up in your neighborhood, and you saw them in the grocery store and they lived around the corner. And so there was sort of a connection that is lost. I mean, and that's the other, and we don't get a chance to talk about that part as much, but that's one of the other casualties of this reform, of this bringing in, you know, these young white and even some young black kids from across the country who have no connection to community, this community. And I have no problem with young white or young black people wanting to come teach. Go get a degree in education. show me that that's what you really want to do and that you're just not trying to pay off, you know, student loans with a couple of years of service. And that's what's happening. These kids are coming in here, working 2 years, and leaving for the most part. No connection to community. They don't connect with these kids. They don't identify with them. You know, at the end of the day, some of them don't even care.
Wow, kind of transient teachers. My last question is, with the situation being what it is and this white invasion of New Orleans as far as the school system, have you seen a spike in racist incidents that are taking place with black students in regards to their dealings with these white teachers? And thank you so much for taking my call and keep up the great work. I appreciate all that you do.
Sure. You know what? I don't have any specific numbers that will let me say I've seen a spike. What I can tell you, just from stories that I've heard and what I know in terms of discipline statistics in public education, and this is across the board in New Orleans and everywhere else, that our children disproportionately impacted by school discipline, suspended and expelled at higher rates for infractions that are, you know, not necessarily worthy of suspension and expulsion. I know for a fact that many of these schools, many of these charter schools, do have these very strict policies. You know, they want kids to walk on a straight line with their hands behind their back, and if they're not doing that, then they're being unruly. And so you do have this culture, this environment where, you know, it's a part of that school-to-prison pipeline. And in a lot of ways, you know, and I've said this before, and I've heard others say it, and I absolutely believe it, this reform, this so-called reform, completely created to feed the school-to-prison pipeline.
The caller at 5992, did you have a question for Ms. Brown?
Hello, Ms. Brown. Hello, everyone. I don't so much have a question. I think you guys pretty much talked about everything, and I certainly do agree with what you said. And but I do want to just add it on when you talk about these teachers, these white teachers in the public school system. 80% of white teachers, white women, I'm sorry, are teachers in the public school system, and they had no real vested interest in the black children. And Ms. Brown, you mentioned the pipeline to prison situation. That's where we see them going. And I keep thinking about the 1968 Ocean Hill Brownsville affair, where the Jews were, they blocked the efforts of blacks in Brooklyn, New York, to control the education of their own children. I constantly think about that because in the context of white supremacy, I see that it's still being enforced because I'm in the Northeast, and it's terrible over here. It's terrible, the inner city school systems here in the Northeast as well as it is across the country. So if you want to make any comments, I would appreciate it. But my thing is about all these white teachers in our schools, I know they have no vested interest whatsoever. Like you said, the younger ones may stay 1 or 2 years and then they will leave. And our children are not getting any real sustenance from the public education system. Then we have to think about the trauma that they bring into the classroom. I did walk away from one career into teaching back in the early 2000s, so I saw it firsthand. As a social worker, I saw it firsthand the type of issues that children bring into the public school system that are never addressed. But in the meantime, they're supposed to adjust to the white teachers, adjust to No Child Left Behind, and all these other variables that the children are not even really focused on. So if you want to address that, I would appreciate it. If not, I thank you for being on the show.
Sure. I'm sorry, Gus. I don't know if it's my line or I'm just having a little trouble hearing, but I think I heard the caller just kind of talking about some of the things we were talking about in terms of the disconnect between the teachers, particularly some of the young white teachers who are now in the urban classrooms, in places like New Orleans and across the nation. And absolutely. And let me say this. You know, as someone who was educated in public schools in the New Orleans metro area, who had white and black teachers when I was growing up, you know, am I going to sit here and say that, you know, all white teachers don't care? Of course not. Sure, there are some people who are teachers, whether they're white or black, who absolutely believe in the importance of reaching children and teaching them and nurturing them and educating them. Those are educators. What I'm saying is that what's happening here and in many other places is that educators have been replaced. You know, so you have this twofold thing. You have people who aren't even educators in the classroom. You know, they've been replaced by recruits. And then when you top that with so many of these quote-unquote teachers in the classroom, totally disconnected, don't, you know, understand, don't look like, don't can't empathize or sympathize with the experiences of these children, they are ill-equipped. I'm not going to say they're bad people. They are simply ill-equipped for the task at hand. And that would all be well and good, except our children are suffering. We got to address that. We have to do something about that. I can't remember, you know, where I read the quote, where I saw the quote, but, you know, I think about this all the time. It's kind of funny that, you know, we have put the education of our children in the hands of our enemy. I'm not saying all white folks are the enemy, but in perspective, you know, just think about the history of America. You know, we're the only folks who have allowed our enemy to educate our children. And, you know, things need to change in that regard. And I don't know if that happens through, you know, us building our own schools, more homeschooling, but I do know that the public education system is funded by the public, and that whatever else we do, we have a right and a vested interest in making that work to our advantage. We have a right to make that work for us in addition to anything else we do. Am I still on?
Oh, yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
I have a horrible connection. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's and wacky with the tech issues. I'm not sure what the issue is. But, yeah, we could hear you crystal clear there, or I could hear you crystal clear.
I hope everyone else.
The caller at 5640, did you have a question for Ms. Brown? You should be with us.
Yes, I'm not sure if this was brought up, but I wanted to pose to the lady, has Dr. Umar Johnson been to New Orleans to any of the public schools or any of your community gatherings to talk about just some of the issues that have been raised, such as the prison to school to prison pipeline and other, you know, issues involving black students? And I also wasn't sure if you've heard of him or if you've read his book on the academic Holocaust against black boys. And then lastly, if you've heard of his predecessor, Dr. Jawanza Kunjufu. Thank you.
I'm very much aware of who Dr. Umar Johnson is. He's been to New Orleans on a couple of occasions that I know of, where, of course, you know, he talked about those various things. Just in this post-Katrina environment, you know, it's hard to, we're really at a point right now where the people who know and get it and understand, know and get it and understand and appreciate and are mobilized, this reform effort, and that's the other thing that I think your listeners need to know, especially across the country in places where this thing is beginning to happen or is in the throes of happening, this thing is not like some happenstance, you know, fly-by-night. This is a well-funded, high-powered machine. When we start talking about the Walter Foundation, the Broad Foundation, the Gates Foundation, and many others that I can't rattle off right now, but those three Kellogg Foundation, those four, in fact, come to mind right off top. We start talking about some of the most wealthy families and foundations in this country funding this thing. And it is now 11 years after Katrina, so entrenched that even when a Dr. Umar Johnson comes, he's kind of preaching to the choir, and people, of course, whose feet are on the ground and trying to do the work of making a substantive change and changing the direction of this reform effort and moving our community in other directions that I think it should go into in order to address some of the negative impacts. And sometimes, and this may be just, you know, my perspective of it after you've been fighting something so long. Sometimes I think I feel like it's just, you know, sometimes just a drop in the bucket and it's not enough. But I'm very aware of who Dr. Umar Johnson is and the work he's done. I'm not as aware, and his book and his positions and philosophies on many things. I'm not as aware of his predecessor, though.
Dr. Kwanza Kanjufu, he's been a guest on the program. He also has done quite a bit of work on the impacts, educational impacts, how racism has disrupted education for black children, black boys, and black girls. I think his most recent project deals specifically with black girls and a lot of the hurdles and problems that are in place to make sure that they are not receiving the highest quality education that they can in the system of racism. Dr. Kwanza Kanjufu. Before we let you go, I know you had said that you also thought it would be important just for folks to also look at, like I said, you could probably spend years on many different aspects of how racism has disrupted, really eviscerated the quality of life for black people in New Orleans in a variety of ways over the last decade or so. You were talking about public housing and the continued disruption of public housing in New Orleans. I know we talked about with Gary Rivlin how they destroyed a lot of the public housing units in New Orleans and the price gouge of public housing post-Katrina and how that also disrupted life for a lot of black people in New Orleans. Just did you want to give a final comment on that before we wrap things up?
Yeah, sure, real quick. It's kind of hard to do it real quick, but real quick if I can. So of many, you know, when Katrina happened, it was more than just education. It was a wholesale opportunity for the people who abandoned New Orleans, at the dawn of segregation, you know, the people who went to the North Shore and all that stuff to come back and say, we're going to take the city back. So how do you do that? You got to take where you live. You got to take where you learn. They took the schools and they took public housing and they tore it down, redeveloped it, Hope 6 redevelopment, or, you know, what's modeled very much like Hope 6 redevelopments, these mixed income developments where, you know, now that we've redeveloped, we've replaced all of the public housing with fewer units. And then we've taken some of those units and made it unavailable for people who actually need public housing, because we're going to rent these units as market rate. Because, of course, the key to changing urban life is the deconcentration of poverty. And because I like my poverty deconcentrated, I care, I know. If I'm impoverished, I really don't think whether or not my neighbor makes six figures really is an issue for me, but they think the deconcentration of poverty was, you know, really important, and that's what they did with public housing. And so now, here we are, 11 years nearly post-Katrina, and you actually have lawmakers and city leaders and business leaders sitting around talking about, oh, we have a housing crisis in New Orleans. We have an affordable housing crisis in New Orleans. People can't afford to live in New Orleans. No stuff. When you tear down all the public housing and then you rebuild these mixed income units, fewer of them, and then you rent a large portion of them at market rate, i.e., you know, a former public housing unit, now that's been redeveloped, a two-bedroom apartment, costs $1,500. In many of these units or close to it. There's the one that they have recently just finished with phases of it, the Iberville project, the Iberville housing development. It's on the basically, it's on the edge of downtown, the CBD. It was a ideal location for many of the poor working people who worked in the hotels and the restaurants downtown. Torn down, redeveloped, two-bedroom apartment now costs $1,500 a month. That could be, not can be, for many poor working New Orleanians, $1,500 a month is all I make, if I'm making that. So I can't afford market rate rent. You're not going to let me back in public housing because all of these stringent rules and regulations that you've put on it, you know, so now if I lived in public housing with my 17-year-old son, but, you know, he caught a charge last year for possession, we can't move back to public housing, at least not if I want to make sure my 17-year-old son has a place to live. So either through the pricing or through these rules and regulations, you have taken, you know, public housing, affordable housing. Public housing was never free. You know, it was affordable housing. I know many people that lived in public housing who paid rent, and not a little bit of money, but what they could afford every month. You've taken that away, and now you have people who want to talk about the affordable housing crisis. You knew that was going to happen when you did what you did. That's why you did it. You did not expect, you did not want black people, especially poor black people, to return. That's why you tore down public housing. I'll leave you with this funny story. So this week, in fact, there is going to be a panel discussion on the affordable housing crisis in New Orleans. One of the members of this panel, one of the participants of this panel discussion, is a gentleman by the name of Press Kabakoff. He is the chief executive officer of HRI Properties. HRI Properties, he's the owner of HRI Properties. HRI Properties has been the chief private redeveloper of public housing units in New Orleans. He's the guy charging $1,500 a month to stay in what used to be public housing in New Orleans. How you have a public, a panel discussion on the affordable housing crisis in New Orleans and make Press Kabakoff one of your panelists is beyond me. That is so absolutely the epitome of inviting the fox to the hen house. I can't take it. This is where we're at in New Orleans. It makes me sad. I don't know what else to say.
It was all planned, and maybe Mr. Kabakoff is coming to apologize for what he's done and to see if he can make amends. Maybe that's going to go.
You know what? If this radio hosting thing doesn't work out, you could go on the comedy circuit. Press Kabakoff is not coming to apologize. He's coming to tell us why everything he's doing has been perfect and tell us what we need to do to return to splendor. Oh, he wrote this little document right after Katrina called Return to Splendor, how this was the perfect opportunity to make New Orleans a wonderful place again. And now he's on a panel about affordable housing crisis in New Orleans. Yeah, I'm sad. I told you before, I'm moving to Washington State.
Oh, man. Nothing, I've said consistently, if you look at Hurricane Katrina, it was devastating. You talk about tragic like biblical proportions. If you look at what happened, yes, immediately August 29, 2005. But if you follow everything that has happened in the last 10 years,
that was the real disaster.
Buddy, it is about on par. If you just keep following the story and what has happened, like, oh man, that was just the beginning of the tragedy. But you can get a lot more information about what we've been talking about in terms of the school situation and the housing situation, really all areas of people activity. What happened with Ray Nagin, the shooting on the bridge that just came up, the Danziger Bridge incident. Go to theneworleanstribune.com. TheNewOrleansTribune.com. You'll see a lot of great material, not just from our guest, Miss Anitra Brown, but a lot of the other great journalists.
Absolutely. Got a lot of great journalists writing for us, so you'll see a plethora of things. Please visit us. Like our Facebook page. We're on Facebook as The New Orleans Tribune. Follow us on Twitter at NO Tribune.
There you go. It's linked. You can get the website linked in the description to the program. I'm following on Twitter as well, so you can go to our site. I'll make sure to repost their Twitter page also so you can follow and keep up with all the great information. Thank you so much for hanging out with us this evening and giving us an update. Always a pleasure to have you on the program, and we'll look forward to speaking with you soon down the road, Ms. Brown.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it as well.
Outstanding. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
You too. Thank you. You too.
For sure. Context of white supremacy. Again, had some tech issues that were a bit surprising. Just because I was in a spot that I've done like many, many programs, private area and fast internet connection, and just was not good. But hopefully that will not be an issue, because we should be here the next, I think, 4 days in a row. Pam should be here tomorrow. I know many listeners have been requesting that we address what to do, or suggestions for black people who have a family member, or maybe a close friend, but certainly family members who are unfortunately in some sort of tragic arrangement where they are married to a white person, or maybe have had a child with a white person, or looking like they're headed that direction. Suggestions, things to do. Pam will be here to discuss that tomorrow. Hopefully we won't have any of the tech issues. We should be here on Thursday. I was able to confirm Dr. Frances Kress-Welsing, her sister, Lauren Kress-Love. She'll be with us this coming Thursday. Always a pleasure to talk to her and just to keep Dr. Welsing's spirit with us and get more information, some of the things that she remembers about her. That'll be Thursday. We'll be here Friday with the book study session, Medical Apartheid, Harriet A. Washington, phenomenal book, required reading in my opinion, study session number 5, and then the compensatory call-in on Saturday. So stay tuned. Hopefully it'll be a little clearer. It won't be so difficult for folks to listen in and get the information for the next 4 or 5 days that we're on. If you have other questions, suggestions, other than gripes about the tech issues from today, I'm very well aware of that. So if it's something beyond that, feel free to drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com, on Twitter, @untiljustice. And certainly, Mr. Kabakov, he was mentioned prominently in Gary Rivlin's book, Katrina After the Flood. I think he was one of the white people that was going in and buying up properties. That, you know, the same strategy where you go in, you take advantage, you can get the property for cheap. When the property value is low, you can gut it, renovate it, and then sell it at a much higher rate. I think they have whole books talking about this, Naomi Klein, disaster capitalism, where whites can come in and really turn a pretty penny at the expense of black people. But I think he was one of the folks that was mentioned by name that was doing this in the days, weeks, months after the storm Hurricane Katrina and the levee failure. With that, we will wrap things up. I would spend time getting folks in, but just the tech issues have me a bit more concerned. So we'll make time. Well, I don't know if we'll make time for that tomorrow, because I know Area 8 tends to be a very popular subject matter, so we might not have time for that tomorrow. But I'm sure folks will get an opportunity to share their views, comments, thoughts down the road, because we'll be on a lot this week. With that, thanks for the folks tuning in, being patient, hanging in. I hope you were able to get information, because I do think this is a very important subject matter, and I know we have listeners that are in the Louisiana area. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism, with all of the planning and plotting, scheming that is going on against black people. You definitely want to be able to think at your best to make the top decisions to keep yourself safe and anybody that you might be responsible for. I always encourage, if you're going to be behind the wheel, driver, passenger, even as a pedestrian, you do not want to be intoxicated. You're just making Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, you're making their job 1,000 times easier. If they want to lock you up, beat you, rape you, even kill you, if you're under the influence, it'll be way easier to do all of the above. I would also encourage, buckle up if you're going to be behind the wheel. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with enforcement officials. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Man, I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.